Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation.
You are a human animal. You are a very special breed. For you are the only animal who can think, who can reason, who can read.
From KCRW Santa Monica, I'm Michael Silverblatt, and this is Bookworm. Today we continue our series, An American Bookworm in Paris, recorded recently when, as a guest of the cultural services of the French Embassy, I was in Paris for the very first time. My guests today are poets Pierre Alfieri and novelist Emmanuel Carrère.
Here I am, an American in Paris, at POL, the home of the avant-garde and the new in Parisian literature. Today I am talking to Pierre Alfieri. He is a poet. Now, as I understand it, only the very tip of the iceberg of the works of Alfieri have been translated to American publishing. What we have are two books, Natural Gates, which was published by Sun and Moon, which is now known as Green Integer, and also 0x0, OXO. I just thought of it as being like a tic-tac-toe board.
You could interpret it like that, but it was an invention of the translator, actually, because the French title refers to a brand of little soup cubes, you know, that dilute.
Bouillon cubes.
And in French, the brand, it's a famous brand from the invention of the bouillon cube, actually. It's Cube Or, which you could hear as golden cube, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And OXO, apparently, is a common brand or type of these things, is it? Of cubes?
Uh-huh. I see. Yes. And this book, OXO, OXO, comes from Burning Deck. I see exactly why the translator liked this bouillon cube idea, because in your work I find a species of distillation of, you know, it's like if you were smelting an ore and breaking down the ore into its components to see what it's made up of, and then building back up the elements to recompose either an action or an element or an essence, it seems to me. Now, one of the things that happens in Natural Gates, and it is translated by Cole Swenson, a very interesting American poet who now teaches at the writing program in the University of Iowa. In fact, both of these books have been translated by Cole Swenson. And very intelligently, it seems to me, the publisher has placed on the cover of the book of poems Natural Gates by my guest Pierre Alfieri a picture from Muybridge. And he's breaking down an action. And what we find here in this book is breakdowns of conventional activities. And I thought I would ask you to read the first poem in its entirety, which is Pressure. This is from Natural Gates by Pierre Alfieri.
1. Pressure can double the pressure acting on a supple body, laterally, vertically, headed down, headed up, and from the heart to the skin, maintain the voluminous appearance, the buoy. Pressure can triple more deeply, equally divided, can quadruple without a trace, the movements astonishingly easy, light, not owned, not knowing, the idea alone disturbs, the idea of the tension, of the fragility of arteries and tissues, and causes a vague reticence. 2. How the background insists still on the unleashed form, through minute decisions, numerous, implicit, by conceiving of things, their equally shared constraint, not to be said, not to be done, be it death, abstract, the swimmer's stroke imagined from the point of view of the molecules of displaced water. 3. A peripheral feeling appears after a few months, hardly a feeling, rather an easement, a buffer zone, an adjacent street empty. One could view what follows as a progressive shrinking. Each child was several, the place was not missing, the number decreased slowly, the oldest ones so compacted they could no longer breathe. 4. It appears that bubbles wander free as air, even in the compressed column of a fire hose. 5. But the depth tattoos itself on the back. The body fights against itself for space. Underwater, to skim the bottom says something. This particular abrasion, acting slowly on the species, was at first a visceral fight and formed the flattened fish of the uncharted depth, their eyes protruding, their chests crushed, their translucent fins in the image of a human body, hydrocephalic and without organs, limbs atrophied except for the hands, of the body in working or swimming order, as it, through kinesthesia and the converging of sensations towards two or three foci, sees itself.
Pierre Alfery, reading from the translation of his poetry, Natural Gates, the translation accomplished by Cole Swenson, a kind of wizard of translation, and an American poet herself. Now, it seems to me that an essence of the work here is in the phrase, the swimmer's stroke imagined from the point of view of the molecules of displaced water. That again and again in these poems, things are examined from the point of view of their traces and the periphery, the sign left behind of an action no longer there to be seen. Am I right? And
Yes, this is very insightful. I had thought of it in those terms, but it's true that all the poems refer to movements, physical movements, but also imaginary movements, and they tend to look at it from two or three points of views, so that the movement is itself is both initiated, but also it's something that you're submitted to, and the language rhythms are also in this way several movements at the same time concurring or interfering with each other.
Yes, and also the sense of a perpetual present, what Gertrude Stein is trying to do by making a kind of cubist narrative from different points of view, but all in a present tense of evolution, of unfolding as you read, as you watch, as you breathe, as you hear the line of poetry, that the rhythm is the rhythm of an unfolding.
Yes, absolutely. And also because for me, poetry as a form imposes itself only when I need to refer to the present moment as such, so the moment of writing itself. It's never about some object or subject matter that is previously, decided or chosen. It's always a kind of exercise of verbal and mental gymnastics. So it's really about what is happening in terms of movement and rhythm with the writing.
I'm talking to Pierre Alfery. He has two books translated in English, Natural Gates, published by Green Integer, Sun and Moon, and also Oxo, published by Burning Deck. Now, I know these two books. What would I need to know to get a fuller picture of who and what you are in your own, in the literature of your own people, your own Paris, your own France?
Well, these two books are in a way the very beginning of my work, the early work. And my work evolved then into different forms from this poetic, let's say, it's poetry at the start, but from this poetry or poetic form, it evolved into very different forms. Really all came from the first impulse, so to speak, which is a very physical, rhythmical urge with language and perception, and not so much. I was never obsessed with the history of poetry and poetic forms as such. It was just one possibility at the time that I needed to try. But then I tried to integrate larger elements than these present perceptions, minutiae. And so in a narrative form, for instance, instead of telling a continuous story with characters, I tried to write a novel and then another one, both with very different stylistic moments, different voices, and almost unconnected frames or pictures that would come together in the narrative. And so that some people said it's not a novel for the first one. And then the second one, it looked a little more like a novel because I took a lot from scenarios and film stories. But it was really more using many stories in one than telling one single story.
Now, I want to ask a question that I hope will not annoy you. I sense as you're talking about your work that there is an affiliation, at least with some of the things that I've heard in the past, about the work of Natalie Serot.
Mm-hmm.
That she wrote books. There was one translated into English with a title like They Hear.
Mm-hmm.
And each chapter is a phrase that she remembers hearing in childhood and an opening of that phrase to reveal possibilities latent, not quite heard, not quite understood then. Now, in many ways, many French writers feel a difficulty relating themselves to the works of the so-called new novelists, who included, of course, Robespierre, Sarraud, Panget, Claude Simon, even some feel Marguerite Duras. First of all, do you find an affiliation in your work? And the reason I'm told that the difficulty exists is that people feel that the new novelists in their special forms and difficulties caused a halt in the development of the novel in France rather than an extension.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't agree with that at all. I think that on the contrary, the Nouveau Roman was probably one of the only interesting things that happened in French novels in the second half of the century, if not the only one. I don't see another movement comparable to that. And French novel is, on the whole, very, very behind formally and in its invention of form and perception, behind what was written then. And I wouldn't say I'm influenced by any particular writer of this generation, except I was very, very much impressed by Beckett's work, but Beckett is not reducible to the Nouveau Roman. As for Sarraud, I don't feel close to her writing as such, the way she writes so much, as with the idea, the first idea that was Tropisme, her first novel,
absolutely,
which is an idea that is very close to what I'm looking for in terms of the space where writing occurs, that is a space between beings, between conscious thoughts, a kind of hypo, how do you say, under under zone almost of subconscious and unsaid things and feelings that are difficult to phrase because they're feeling about the community of persons in the same space, what's between, you know, things and bodies and explicit statements. So in this sense, yes, I like the reference you make to her.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. That was poet Pierre Alfieri, author of Oxo, published by Burning Deck, and Natural Gates from Sun and Moon. It is said, but not generally known, that Alfieri is the son of the late French philosopher Jacques Derrida. We'll be back after this short break. This is Michael Silverblatt, and we are continuing the series, An American Bookworm in Paris.
I am in the apartment of one of my favorite French writers, Emmanuel Carrère. He is the author, well, of the four books I know are The Mustache, Gothic Romance, Class Trip, and The Adversary. We are sitting in his apartment. School has just let out. There is a cluster of human animals downstairs making their way home from the classroom, and we're about to start our interview. Carrère, in addition to writing novels and essays, has been directing films recently, one of which is of his own novel, The Mustache. There was a film made of Class Trip, if I'm not mistaken, although not by you. And I wanted to begin by asking, The Mustache is your first. Where did it come from?
It was not my first novel in France. It was the third one, but it was the first published in English and also who met some success in France. But, you know, it's a short book. It's more a long short story, in fact, than a real novel. And I think it was critics in France spoke also about Kafka, authors like that. I think it was very clearly influenced by authors, you know, American science fiction writers of the 50s and 60s, and like Richard Matheson or Robert Shickley or Philip K. Dick, about whom I wrote, whose biography I wrote later.
It's a singular thing about critics. They would rather have a classical influence than a science fiction influence.
In fact, because in France they don't know science fiction at all.
Well, and also they want to claim you for literature.
Yeah. They think it's more flattering.
Yes. And I think that it does.
I think it's very well intentioned to tell you that. But I
think also that the direction of your work is literary. In fact, that's the surprise that people keep expressing. A writer that Americans are thinking a lot about just now, Junot Diaz, says, hey, no fooling. It's really, true crime that is literary. I swear, man, really. And he's talking about your book, The Adversary, which is about the man who has been, it's a true story, such a good husband, son-in-law, son, investing his in-law's money, a doctor with the World Health Organization. He goes to work every day, and then one day comes home and kills those in-laws, and we discover that he had never been a doctor, that he'd been walking about in the forest. So the little hole...
And that he had been lying for 18 years, in
18
fact.
Years. And, you know, to everyone, that there was no one to whom he had confided.
It was not only a writing experience, but a personal and human ordeal, and that it was the, you know, the most terrible and painful thing that I did and experienced in my whole life, and it was very long, and honestly. I'm proud of the book. I think that there is in the book something that all this was not in vain. Can I say that?
Yes, it was not in vain.
It was not in vain, because there is something that... you know, I think that inside every one of us, there is a window with a view on hell. And... what happens in this book is that I stay in front of this window and I take the reader by the hand. I tell him, well, we shall look together through this window the time that is needed to see what they, and I think it was quite courageous, and I can't say I'm glad I did it, but at least I did it, and it was not nothing.
What I like about this is that phrase you used, I'll hold the reader's hand and we'll look through the window into hell together. Mm-hmm. That unlike a certain kind of writing that would become callous or ferocious about this subject, that somehow you do have in common with Truman Capote, the background of the hurt and miraculous child growing mm-hmm. up into the singular adult capable of compassion for the ferocious.
Mm-mm-mm.
And that for some reason we're not dealing with motiveless malignity, but rather with the narrative voice that says, we are awed and amazed by the state of loneliness and fright that leads to mm-hmm. an odd act. And the preparation, in a sense, comes in Class Trip. Class Trip is particularly useful. Now, for me, this book was very meaningful and important book. In a sense, my writing teacher, Donald Barthelme, would begin frequently by saying, we have all had unhappy childhoods. Mm-mm. This is a given. And now we must, you know, either demonstrate that we have had the unhappiest childhood or move on.
It was published in 1995, and it's the last work of fiction I wrote. I don't write necessarily autobiographical books. The last one, which is not published yet in the United States, but which is in the process of transition, is in an autobiographical book. But I don't know if I shall continue in this on this track. But what I know, what maybe I'm afraid of, but I can do nothing against that, is that maybe I'm lost for fiction.
I'm wondering, do you know what you're working on now?
What I'm working on? I'm trying to work, but I don't know exactly what on, in fact. You told me just before of the record that you were afraid that I would be lost for book for writing and doing only films, but which will not happen, I think. But There is one thing I learned from filmmaking, and that I do more and more. It's, you know, it's like editing, not editing a feature fiction film, but editing a documentary film where you have a lot of rushes of very different, and you try to make something of all this, so I have, you know, a lot of beginnings and things that are written on, could go on in one way, and things could go to another, on another way. And there is a moment where I begin to edit all these pieces and to try to discover what is the pattern, what is the design that it said, and if all these failures of these stories that failed to become a real story, if all together they create a story. That's how I worked for the last book that I published, which is quite a strange book and which I like, and I think I'm trying to do the same thing right now. You know, not the same thing, but it's the same kind of process. I have been trying to write a book, you know, from the beginning to the end, and knowing where I'm going. And when I know where I'm going, I don't go there anymore. So that I don't. It becomes impossible to go. I think I can work only, you know. A tâton, you know, like if I were blind, you know, and I was trying to find my way in the darkness, in the dark.
I've been speaking to Emmanuel Carrère, the author of Class Trip, The Mustache, The Adversary, and a book which I like, but which he is willing to forsake, Gothic Romance. We're here in Paris, in Carrère's apartment. Thank you for your time and for allowing us to come visit you.
Thank you very much.
This program is one in our special series, An American Bookworm in Paris. You can podcast this program, share it with a friend, or embed it on your blog with a click of a button on our new media player at kcrw.com. My co-producer is Melinda Siegel. Alan Howard is associate producer. The technical director is Mario Diaz. Grateful acknowledgments to the cultural services of the French Embassy, Jan Perrault, Odile Frumann, Fabrice Gabriel, and to my translator, Sandra Schmal. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcast the most recent ones from our website. Go to kcrw.com/bookworm, plus copies are available. For ordering information, call 310-450-5183.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. An American Bookworm in Paris continues with two guests, Emmanuel Carrère, screenwriter, director, and author of Class Trip, The Mustache, and The Adversary, a true story of monstrous deception, and avant-garde writer Pierre Alfieri. His books of poetry, Oxo and Natural Gates, are now out in English. An American Bookworm in Paris continues next time on Bookworm.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air, new music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.